Welcome back to the Clean Sailors Podcast. Let's talk about sailing, our marine industry, and innovations towards getting it clean. I'm your host, Holly, founder of Clean Sailors and a sailor myself with a passion for the health of our mighty oceans. Through conversations with innovators, inventors, adventurers, and inspirational sailors, we're looking at those who are helping to change the way things are done. As clean sailors, clean has meant challenging ourselves in the marine industry and our everyday sailing to become more environmentally aware and sound. For this podcast, we're looking at clean from another perspective. Now, the one thing I find tricky to get accustomed to, when offshore in particular, is the food. For me and my upbringing, food at sea is very much fuel and certainly morale. Hot, filling, long burn, energy loaded, and as quick as possible to cook. When racing, well, let's talk freeze-dried bags and a kettle of hot water. How can we become more nutritious at sea? And how can we satisfy all of the above without relying on bowls of pasta, tinned beans, and in the extreme cases, the pot noodle? I'm delighted to welcome Sarah Powell, certified coach, plant-based nutritionist, sailor, and ex-super yachtie to our podcast to discuss clean cooking and eating and why in some ways it's even more important for cruising, racing, life on a boat than home life on land. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi. Hi, Holly. Thank you so much for that lovely introduction.
Well, as I said, I'm very, very excited to finally be recording this because it's genuinely reframed the way I've been thinking about food. Now, if I could get paid to eat, I would do it all the time. I really, really enjoy and appreciate food and nutrition and certainly at home take it pretty seriously. But as soon as I step on board, I naturally, and it just seems to be the done thing that you switch very much into, you know, the food for fuel and ease mentality. And I think we've got a lot to learn from you in particular. So you're well familiar with life on board. Tell us a bit about your experience sailing to date and your current boat lifestyle.
Yeah, well, we left land this time around as a family in 2021. And we jumped on board a 30-foot boat. So there's three of us, my husband and my son. And it was a 30-foot Halmatic with a galley that was less than a square metre. And the very first night we bought the boat, it was in Portishead and we were living in Spain at the time. And I remember arriving and just looking at this tiny, tiny galley and going, what am I supposed to do in this? We're having it tonight, okay? Because it was just overwhelming at first to be able to give this nutrition that I really believe our family needs. And I've always sort of cooked healthily at home with whole foods. And I was just kind of overwhelmed at the idea of being able to provide such delicious, nutritious food when we need it most on this little boat with this little galley, you know? We started off there and we've been sailing ever since. And I just make it work and become creative. And it's been really interesting, the journey, because I would share my information, you know, when you'd have other boaters or cruisers coming along and they would see what I was kind of cooking, they would be really interested and start talking to me and asking me questions. And I realized that actually what I was doing wasn't the norm and that people could learn from it and people really wanted to eat healthier. Our small vegan kitchen really started just by me sharing my knowledge from me working in the food industry in the past and just my passion for nutritious food while sailing. So that's how it started. We've now since moved to a slightly bigger boat. We're on a 41-foot Sigma, which is fantastic. Galley's slightly bigger, but all is relative. And I'm still able to prioritize nutrition and giving our bodies the very best. We need to be at our very best at sea.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, or the other nail on the head. Part practicality, but also just space. Perhaps it's a really ridiculous and pathetic excuse of mine, but if you haven't got your nice sharp knives and all of your mixing kit and, you know, places to store stuff, it does become a different kind of experience cooking and eating on a boat for sure. But when did it start meaning sort of nutrition and nourishment to you as well as the fuel? And how do you actually cultivate that?
Well, to be honest, I've always been in the food industry, as I mentioned. So I'm always aware and conscious of our foods. But it was only when I got pregnant back in 2014 that I really started to research what foods I can eat and realizing, actually becoming aware and conscious of the effect of the nutrition on our bodies. And then I slowly started to plant a seed. And then with regards to sailing, it's become something where we invest so much money in making sure the electronics on our boat are absolutely top performing. But we forget the human element and leave that down to a pot noodle or a, you know, Frey bentos and hope for the best. And really, it's all about actually being able to harness that information and knowing what foods we can eat and how we can actually do that in a really small galley. I mean, I get it that the race teams are on, you know, freeze-dried foods, because have you seen a galley on a race boat? I mean, there's nothing really you can do. Whereas we're really sailing, especially cruisers and super yacht crew, that we have the luxury of having a fully functioning gimbaled stove where we can actually make things. And as you're coming back to what you said about space, it's all about setting yourself up for success. So it's about taking time out and going, this is not going to work, so how will it work? How can it work? Where can I put my knives? Where can I put my easies with the food I use all the time? We all know that when we open cupboards on a boat, things fall out and everything is mishmashed. So it's all about, well, how can I make it so there is a logic to my storage, so it makes it easy? Because nobody likes to do things that are difficult, and especially when those things are out of our comfort zone. So that's kind of how I approached setting up the galley, to make it more efficient and effective to be able to cook.
I think it's a very important element of it, right? Because you want the space and the environment within which you're working on your food and your nutrition for yourself and your crew, right? To be easy, accessible, comfortable, and all of that. But I'm also appreciating that we're talking about not just sort of your substantial, say, three meals a day, but we're talking about extensive passages at times. I mean, whether it's for a blue water cruiser or a super yacht crew, you can be traversing water for weeks and weeks at a time, let's say even just on an Atlantic passage. And you're on watch, your body clock is adapting to that too. The sort of type of nutrition and support your system needs in order to achieve that when so much around you is ultimately slightly out of whack.
I think it's about knowing that food is so much more than taste. And if we start off understanding what food represents to people, as well as their physiological side and the needs that we have when we're sailing, to put it in the context of the super yachts, it's about the chefs being able to understand what is needed when we're traversing. We're constantly moving on a boat, so we're burning calories. And we do need calories, but we need healthy calories. We don't want empty calories. So we don't want saturated fats, which are high in calories but low in nutrition. We want to have foods that can allow us to have the energy sustained that we need, so that if we do need to go on deck to do some sail changes or check out, or we have an adrenaline rush because all of a sudden we've got a gust and we've got to deal with that on board, then we need to know that what we're eating is supporting that and not dipping us. The most important thing is to fill our plates with healthy fats, complex carbohydrates, and good sources of protein, which can be found from many different plant sources. And having plants as well is really easy to have on board. It's a lot easier to have whole foods and prepare for these whole foods for the chef. So I think it's once we change our chip in knowing that we don't have to put out Michelin star type food, but what we do need to do is prepare nourishing food to help the crew do what they need to be able to do and support them in that, you know, mixing white rice with brown rice so that we can get the initial hit from the white rice, from the carbohydrate, that sugar, to give us the energy we need, but having the brown rice to give us sustained energy from the complex carb. It's all about knowing these little tricks, which just make a passage so much more easier. And morale, you mentioned that in your introduction about food being a morale booster. And I feel that that's something that's super important for chefs to understand, you know, how we can sort of just bring out a little cake, and it can be done. You know, I did it on my 30-foot boat. It can be done even in seas, just bringing that out. But it can be made out of nutrition, you know. So not only is it serving our morale and our well-being, mental well-being, but it's also helping us physically being able to deal with life at sea and life on passage.
I appreciate too that a lot of people listening may be more familiar with the blue water cruising environment than the super yacht environment. And when we're talking about those boats, we're obviously talking sailing boats and also motor yachts, right? And we're talking about usually one chef who's cooking for a crew of, say, 20, 30 people at times. Obviously, sailing yachts are a little bit smaller, but motor vessels, you'll get, you know, a chef for the guests effectively, and then a chef for the crew whose responsibility it is to feed and support everyone who's working on board. That's a big task, because my dietary interest requirements pretty different to yours probably, Sarah, as to all of us, our preferences and otherwise. So we're talking about, you know, even for crew on a smaller 41-foot boat such as your own, if you're topped up with crew and you're about to do a long passage, you also have to operate within the realms of practicality for the majority, as well as obviously providing, or at least having some recognition of people's individual requirements. The bigger the boat, the bigger the crew, the bigger the hurdles, let's say, in that. So how do you encourage, and how have you been working with super yachts, crews in particular, super yacht chefs, to think about food differently? What have been some of the key things you've seen that could be done better, and how have you helped?
The one thing I'm really hearing from chefs is that overwhelming frustration of being able to turn out new delicious meals and that have the nutritious element, but also that they meet the requirements or the diverse palates of every particular crew, whether that's for allergies, whether that's for convictions like being vegan or vegetarian, or whether they're, you know, they're meat eaters because it's part of their culture, like the Antipodeans and especially the South Africans. You know, it's, or culture, it's a big melting pot, as you said, and trying to get that together is overwhelmingly frustrating for a chef who just wants to prepare these beautiful meals that look amazing and taste amazing. So what we try and do is work on inclusivity for all, rather than trying to get them to make individual meals, you know, oh, this is the vegan meal and this is the one for the gluten-free and this is the one for the one who likes the meat. That's actually an awful lot of work. And I totally understand that the chefs are struggling to be able to keep up with that. So let's make an inclusive meal. Let's make an inclusive dal, for example, that's gluten-free, soy-free, plant-based, and then we can then add for those, if they really want their meat, they can add then grilled meat that they want or grilled fish, and that can be the accompaniment. So your actual base is inclusive for all. This takes out an awful lot of stress. And actually, what they will find is people will reduce their requirements for meat. You'll need to make less and less meat because the plants will be filling you up so much that you won't have any space for, you know, you're full from the plants and the plant-based meals. So, which is much better for the environment, of course, and better for our health, in my opinion. So I think it's all about giving them the tools to be able to create inclusive foundation meals, if you like to call it that, that we can then add to, just like we would make a meal and then put some extra chili for those who like it spicy. You know, it's really about looking at food in a way that serves everybody, because if the chef's happy making it, she's going to make delicious food. And if the crew are happy eating it.
You mentioned a couple of, it's interesting you named it convictions, but how do you encourage people to think differently about food? Because I appreciate that many of us in society, to put it gently, actually identify as a food eating kind of type, you know, whether people are carnivorous or I'm vegan or I'm vegetarian, or I mean, people can be incredibly impassioned by it and passionate about it. We stick very strongly to these identities around food. So how do you approach that in an environment where you're not almost discouraging people very openly from moving away from something that obviously is clearly quite important to them?
Totally. And this comes from my coaching background as well, the way in which I approach it. Basically, I'm not going to stand there and say, this is meat and these are plants, so there's meat versus plants. No, what we're going to do here is actually step out of that ring and go to a completely different arena. And that arena is all about well-being. Okay, so we're not talking about the sides of should we have meat, should we not, I'm vegan or I'm not. We're actually taking it to a very different level where we're looking after the crew. I was working with a super yacht recently, and the crew on a Monday evening would like to go out to the gym really early. And so of an afternoon, I would give them a beetroot smoothie with some berries and things like that. And I'd say, hey guys, I'm giving you this smoothie. I added some chia seeds for protein. And what also I've done is put some beetroot in there to help with the flow of the oxygen. You'll find your workout should be a lot easier. And tomorrow, I've put you on some turmeric tea in the morning, which is anti-inflammatory, and this will just help you recuperate after the gym and get your antioxidants flowing and anti-inflammation. And they appreciate that because I'm looking after them. I'm looking after their health, and I'm helping them do what they want to do. And that's what it's about. It's about supporting crew. It's not about standing there with my vegan flag saying, this is the way I eat and you should all eat the same as me. No, you know, my son, he likes to eat meat and I cook meat on board, even though everything we have is plant-based. The only thing I will include is a little bit of extra fish or meat for my son. He wants to eat that. He's 10. I'm not going to stop him. I'm allowed to choose my food. And I feel that everyone should have the choice. And I think we can't create impacting change with dictatorship. It doesn't happen. It has to be through leadership. And leadership is allowing people to come to their own conclusions.
It's very powerful and it's very, very refreshing. And I'm making notes. I just want to come live with you. I've said this to you before.
Brilliant. Yeah, we've got a spare room with you. You can have the pilot burst.
I think what's so refreshing about it is because you're contextualizing food. Okay, you're working out, hey, index highly in these things because they're going to support you. The next day, for me today, for example, post a long run, you're feeling a little bit sluggish, you haven't got the DOMS yet, that will be tomorrow. But okay, so how do I start looking at my routine more succinctly in order to choose the foods at the right time to support? And on a boat, it's incredibly physical. Mm. So the way you're framing it is very much around how you're using your body, therefore, what best nourishment to employ to support your body in that. Because we're talking for a lot of people about work, right? I mean, this is employment. This is life and home all in one place. There are going to be days where you're not feeling so great. There's going to be days where there's things flying around and colds and whatever else. And there's going to be days where you index really highly on intensive activity, whether it's by virtue of the weather or, you know, guest requirements or whatever else. It's an always on environment. So what are some of the examples of, I remember you telling me one and I really enjoyed it, about sort of almost the cold element with someone feeling under the weather. How did that go down on board with the remedy that you provided in that context?
You know, it was quite interesting because one of the guys came to me and he was sniffling a bit, and I could just see he looked a bit, you know, as if that flu virus had kind of set in. And so I just reached out and just said, hey, you know, if you're not feeling too good, would you like me to make you a nice hot tea? I find it works for me and you'll sweat a bit. It should help you. And he was like kind of open to that. So he had his tea and came back later and said it was great and could he have another one? So I prepared him pre-mixture. So all he had to do was add his hot water to it. And obviously, like viruses, they spread in a very close-knit team. Then a couple of days later, someone else came to me and was like, but in a really shush way. It was quite interesting how it was like, it was almost like a secret. Don't tell my friends, you know, don't tell my crew that I'm having this. I'm feeling a bit sick and I believe you gave a tea to my crew member and can you give one to me, please? So I gave them one and then slowly but surely they all would come. And then on the last day, it was just like, you know, like a real loud voice over coffee going, oh, I'm feeling really crook. Can you give me one of those teas too? You know, and they called it magic tea. And it wasn't magic tea by any means. It was just using nutrition as a basis to just help us get over, because there's nothing worse than when you know, you've got a cold and you've got to do the kind of work that these guys are doing. And it was really quite interesting how they all sort of really loved the tea in the end and actually recognized that this tea was going to help them. And that for me is a win. It means that they believe in what I'm doing too.
I really love that story. And I love it because, as you said, it was almost, you know, the first person to try it and then spread it to one of their mates. And then it becomes sort of the mainstream and the norm. And the interesting thing is I use the word remedy and you use the word tea. And tea we're all so familiar with, if not drinking every day. So you've already, again, in the context, you're discussing it in a way in which is so accessible to everybody. It's just a tea.
Semantics is key. And I know that from my coaching, that how you word things will often give a different outcome. And, you know, it's super important to speak in the language that these guys are used to and want to hear, and something that is accessible and palatable. You know, if I was like, oh, would you like my special herbal remedy? You know, I really think they probably want to turn around and go, no, thank you.
I think that's a really big one, isn't it? It's not just about the food, but the psychology behind the food.
Yes.
Or the nourishment. Like you said, it's how obviously providing it for the context, but also providing it on the basis of just well-being. For example, let's say I'm preparing for a week's passage, 7 days, I'm going to go to the north coast of Portugal from the UK. And my watch system of, say, three people is going to be pretty intensive. You're going to have about four on, four off.
Yeah.
You're going to be tired. You're going to be exposed to potentially a lot of cold, a lot of wet, a lot of wind. So there's the temperature gradient. There's the tiredness, as I said. You've obviously got the physical activity of sailing and sail changes and tacking and all hours of the night. So what are some of the key things that you would be looking at yourself in pulling on board or even pre-preparing before you head out?
It's really, that's sort of everything that I talk about with the cruisers and in my workshops and webinars. It's all about how to set themselves up for success on a passage. And also knowing that we don't know the kind of conditions we're going to be faced with and how we can prepare. You know, we're not going to be able to prepare amazing three-course meals with canapés all the time. So basically what I do is I suggest that we have a grab bag for a couple of days. And in that bag, we keep it under the table in the main cabin. And it's where the food for those next 2 or 3 days, depending on how many crew, is kept. So people don't have to go looking in cupboards. People don't have to ask, where's this, where's that? It's not daunting, it's not overwhelming, and it's really easy. So they can come and grab the things they need. Now, what I suggest is having things like provisioning, not for different occasions, but getting the foods that we can then adapt to the situations. Now, in my webinar, I kind of tell it like it is and call those shitty days, the okay days and the champagne sailing days. And so if we get lentils, for example, and we have a pre-mix of spices that we really love, they might be Moroccan spices, for example. If we're on a shitty day, it's literally just throw a jar or can of lentils in a pan with some of those spices. Give it a mix in a couple of minutes without using hot water, without it being dangerous. We have a lentil mixture. If we can add a tin of tomatoes to that, great. And we're getting a nutritious meal on a really yucky day, but that's flavorsome and sort of boosts morale a bit, you know? Those lentils and that spice mix can also be used to elaborate it a bit more, maybe adding some vegetables on a good day. And then for a champagne sailing day, why not make some naan bread too while we're at it? And it's all about being able to have from that one jar of lentils something that can be used in all occasions, which reduces stress and space we need for storage and provisioning. Also, making sure you've got heaps of nuts. Nuts and seeds are key. They're the most amazing foods. They're so underrated. They're full of healthy fats, protein, complex carbs, which is what we need when we're sailing. And to have any kind of nut base, whether that's muesli bars that we've pre-made or just eating a handful of those nuts, is a great way to sustain energy throughout the day.
I really appreciate your perspective on the lentils there and the kind of, forgive my language also,
sorry, yeah.
I'm a bit more prude, perhaps. Having that sort of shit day food. So the food can still be the same. It can still be incredibly nutritious regardless. If it's a really bad day, awful weather, no one's slept, everyone's cranky, you could still make something nutritious, but a little bit simplified. And then you can add stuff to make it super nutritious. You've got more time and the seas are flatter. Yeah. And then you can have it super, super comforting and nutritious. If you've got the most clement conditions in which to make it, you can still make that really healthy food, because I think it's very easy in those circumstances. And I've been known to do it even recently this summer in the middle of the night, horrific sea state. I was a bit unwell. And the one thing, it just needed salt and I needed something hot and something I didn't have to eat a meal. And something like an emergency pot noodle was great because it satisfied not being too filling, being warm, being really high salt content, which after being unwell in those kind of conditions really satisfied me.
Coming to your pot noodle, you know, this is what I do on board. I won't buy pot noodles, but what I will do is buy buckwheat noodles, which are super nutritious, but buckwheat noodles, put them in some water, okay, with a bit of miso paste, a bit of soy sauce, and if you want to add some Chinese five spice, for example, or some curry, then you can. And there you go. You have your pot noodle, which is super nutritious because we're working with buckwheat noodles. We've got the miso, which is fantastic, you know, soy-based fermented, which is great for our gut. A bit of soy sauce, which and a bit of either curry powder or just to give our own taste. And that really is quite an easy, doable thing, you know, even in bad weather. So, yeah, I mean, I always try to think about the delicious foods that I love, but how can I make them nutritious, you know? And that's what I sort of enjoy doing. It's a bit like a lab down here in my galley where we love Nutella, but I hate the idea of Nutella for lots of reasons. And so I make my own. And why not? It's the easiest thing to make. And actually, it's the most delicious thing when you can make some fluffy pancakes, plant-based fluffy pancakes, really easily with a pre-mix that I always have on board with me. And then what I do is just add soy milk, which is a really easy thing to do, even in rough weather, and then just make the pancakes as big as I can so I'm not in the galley for a long time, flip them over and add them to my homemade Nutella. And that is a morale booster of a morning with a coffee, you know? It's like happy days.
Gosh, we all need a Sarah on board. The idea of having fluffy foods on a wet, soggy, cold morning when you're on first watch with a coffee is just delicious. And even better if it doesn't take, you know, an extensive amount of energy or brain capacity to put it all together. That's really cool.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, it's all about pre-mixes as well. Couscous is another great grain that we can use on board. And by pre-mixing it with the different herbs and spices that you like and the different dried fruits, then all you have to do is add some hot water and you've got something really nutritious and delicious. Again, it's all about, it's really about just reframing the way in which we look at food and nutrition and how we actually nourish our bodies. Because when you have to go up on deck and do a sail change, the adrenaline spikes. You come back down, you need to make sure that, you know, you're making the right decisions and you're looking at what you're doing and the safety of your crew with a clear clarity. And we know that glucose spikes can affect our mood. You know, we see that. We know that with people we call hangry, you know, and nobody wants a hangry captain. And so just by nourishing ourselves and just giving ourselves the very best.
I hear you. And I think the biggest opportunity, and certainly for me myself, because I think it's always, a lot of the time, you don't necessarily know what you're going to be facing. And also, exactly. I think the more you do it and the more I've done, you know, passages which are particularly uncomfortable, let's say, you realize the kind of things that you really need. Aware of your glucose is obviously a big thing, I think, just in life. And I can get hungry, but it's always very preventable. It's, you know, you're leaving it too long before you're actually topping up your tank. But I think that the premise is also making sure that in that environment, when your body is working overtly at times, depending on the conditions, you know, you need things that are incredibly nutritious, but actually quite digestible. There's often circumstances where, you know, you need a good meal. Ultimately, for me, it absolutely makes or breaks a passage. And you're right, even if you have jars of crisps and you pre-mix all the vegetables, shake it up, all the spices, give it a good shake, add your water, and then that's your, you know, your lunch or dinner base done, isn't it? It doesn't have to be difficult, any of it.
No, and something that's super important as well when we go at sea is the digestive system that often takes a bit of a backseat when we're at sea. So it's also looking about, there's nothing worse than when we're constipated. It feels uncomfortable. It really doesn't sit well, and especially when you're at sea and on passage. So by looking after yourself and looking after the food you eat and getting as much fiber as possible, you're really helping yourself. At the moment, I'm just sprouting some lentils, which is a really easy thing to do. And it seems like the most complex thing in the world, but it just takes a jar and lentils and water, and that's it. It really is. And it's allowing me to be able then, we'll just put a handful on top of any meal. They become, the nutrients in lentils become so much more bioavailable for us. And having that on passage, you know, it's great. Even if you just put a hand in and just grab a handful of bean sprouts or your lentil sprouts, it's just great nutrition and good for us, you know. And I think that's, it's just about changing our and reframing the way we look at food and nutrition. And something that's really interesting when you mentioned about sailing and not having energy and the food choices that you make, I interviewed for my newsletter an Australian couple that were crossing the Atlantic who'd had problems with their fridge and bought a new one in the Canary Islands. And now these guys, he was an ex-bodybuilder and ate meat more than 3 times a day. You know, they were brought up on farms in Australia and so was she. And they were really, really sort of into that. You know, they wouldn't have a meal without meat. It was just inconceivable. And they told me that their fridge packed up and they changed it, got a new one and stocked it all up with vacuum packed meat for Africa. You know, it was just amazing. And then they said after about 3 days, the fridge packed up. And so they were left throwing away some of the meat that they had and dairy and the cheeses and all of that, and ended up having to go predominantly plant-based for the rest of their passage, which was over 2 weeks. So it was amazing how they arrived and were like, wow, we don't feel as tired as we've ever felt before on passages. We actually feel refreshed. We enjoyed the taste. We became creative. We had way more different ingredients in the plate, which is awesome for your gut microbiome anyway. And we realized that actually, yeah, we're still going to eat a bit of meat, but we're not going to eat as much because we don't need it. And we felt so empowered by that. And so I interviewed them for the thing, because a lot of times when I do these webinars, people are saying, you know, but what do I do with meat? I explain that you can actually survive for your 3 weeks without meat. And people are relieved, because meat does cause a sense of worry. You know, how do we vacuum pack it? What if the fridge, you know, can we get poisoning? Nobody wants to be sick on passage through poisoning. And so that takes that element out of it. So, yeah, it's really interesting to turn the head on provisioning and look at it from a very different perspective.
But it's great, because also I hear you on the fridgelessness, especially if you're sailing and keeping it actually on, particularly if you're not motoring over a long period of time. but also because obviously there's things like vegetables and otherwise, you're not worried about getting sick if it's gone off. You know, things like sort of potatoes and otherwise, they last for quite a good amount of time too, as do things like lentils and beans and otherwise. So I hear you, it's better, it's lighter, it's more energy efficient for your body too, in terms of digestive process and otherwise.
Definitely.
To eating a lot cleaner and a lot more simpler in terms of, let's say, the less complex proteins in terms of digestive ability of meat. And also, like you said, it's also quite a positive challenge, I appreciate, for a lot of people. I think also when you're talking about your digestive system, when you're sailing and boating, does take a bit of a hit. It does also because your body clock is so disrupted at times, you know? And I think that's another thing whereby you develop new routines and therefore you arguably need to be eating only to support those new routines as opposed to trying to hold on to what you would do at home. So if your diet at home is XYZ, you may find that actually you don't either enjoy it or your body doesn't need that so much when you're sailing. And actually there are other things that are more important or useful to support yourself when on the water.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's all about habit as well. You know, foods we eat, there's our supermarket shop, I'm sure, is very repetitive for most people. When they go to the supermarket, what they put in their trolley tends to be more or less the same things, you know, every week or every 2 weeks. And I think it's really important to be able to see that by, you know, diversifying and looking at food in a very different way, we can serve ourselves and serve our crew. And I'm super passionate about that and about teaching people and guiding people, because this knowledge is something that I've cultivated and picked up through, you know, different courses at universities, and also my experience in the food industry. And I'm just really happy to share that, because I think it's something that needs sharing. You know, it can benefit us all. So I love to share that with the fellow cruisers that I meet when I'm out, or working with the super yacht chefs. And I'm very open to answering people's questions and helping them with their doubts on how to switch over to a more cleaner food source.
Let's recap on the racing team also that you worked with, because I think this is also a slightly different environmental context and bodily requirement, right, when it comes to nutrition as opposed to a blue water cruiser. Mm. Not the offshore racing, freeze-dried food, we've all been there, but almost like the race crew that you were working with in terms of how to optimize performance alongside obviously getting the right kind of nutrition, whilst also encouraging a slightly different type of eating, let's say, given where they were from. How did that go down, and how did you work with that race team in particular?
Okay, so it's a race team that's slightly, you know, it's not a race team on the regatta field. It's a high performance, high profile super yacht that's actually going to be beating records of sailing over the Atlantic. So to be honest, they don't have the support and the network that as a sail team like Sail GP or the America's Cup would have. Yet they're not a super yacht crew who'll just eat, you know, any old food. They have a really high workload. And working with them was an absolute joy. It really was, because they were so receptive to that, for the main reason of that they saw that I was really, you know, helping them and looking after them. And so it's about understanding, right, what are you guys going to be doing? Are you big sweaters, for example? If your people who sweat a lot, then remember, if you're going to pop down and have a glass of water, that's not actually conducive. What's going to happen is you're going to wee that out a bit later and wee out all your minerals and salts. So we need to make sure you're sipping all the time. Can you wear a camel pack underneath your outfit, especially the ones who really need to drink a lot? And if you're sweating a lot, then let's see if we can get you in the fridge, because they did have a fridge on this yacht. If we can get some foods like watermelon, cucumbers that we can cut up into pieces already, have them in Tupperwares or vacuum packs where you can go and eat them, and then you're eating your water, so to speak, as well. And then looking at the people who have a higher metabolism, we actually did studies on their transit time. So working out how long it takes them for their food to go from eating all the way to pooing out. Sorry, Holly, this is turning into a bit of a we looked at transit time, because people with a very short transit time or a longer transit time, it can give us so much information about their health and how we can adapt and change the nutrition. And that's what basically I was doing. You know, we're looking at, well, we can make these power balls, these little bliss balls that you can make. Well, we can make them with natural ingredients, but we can also control the calorie content. So if in one bite you want to have maximum calories, then change the ingredients to give that. If you actually want other ones which are maybe higher in protein, then I can change the ingredients, and they're all natural ingredients. There's no chemical ingredients, there's no additives or preservatives, because these foods are made purposely for them, tailored to fit and bespoke to their needs. And we would store them on board, and they're plant-based, so there's nothing in them that can go off. And they really appreciated having this energy. They could just come and grab a little muesli bar that was homemade, or even chocolate that was filled with nuts and seeds that's homemade. Again, it's these products that they give them, you know, who doesn't want to eat a bit of chocolate on board? I make my own Twix, which they really loved, you know, and that was, it's just totally plant-based, full of good nutrition and very low in saturated fats and calories compared to a normal Twix, and certainly no additives or nasties in them. And they're just, you know, loving it because it's making them feel good. And they all noticed a big improvement. So they would talk to me quite a bit about how more frequently they would be going to the toilet and things like that. And this is all super positive, because by doing this, you're instilling with them a different way of life and a different way of eating. And then when they were on passage, the captain was very, very keen that they had one home-cooked meal a day. And that had to be pre-prepared and vacuum-packed for them in particular portion sizes. And they were keen on that because nobody likes freeze-dried food at the best of times. And they were suffering with constipation and things like that from the freeze-dried food. And so I worked to create delicious, nutritious, homemade meals, you know, but things were quite exotic, you know, but also with thinking of making sure we get the right mix of spices and making sure we get the right mix of herbs so that it's not too overpowering, but we're actually getting the benefits of the nutrients from that. So yeah, so it worked really, really well. And they, you know, they had all their meals, and they found that, wow, you know, they look forward to their meal of, what are we having today? You know, and they would send me WhatsApp pictures of them eating their meal with big thumbs up and things like that. And that's when I realized actually that there's so much work to do, and there are so many ways in which we can help people do their job better. That's my thing. I want to do what I love so that you can be the best version of yourselves at sea. And that's really sort of my philosophy and a purpose.
As incredibly powerful, and what a potent combination, particularly to hear. And as you said, having the home-cooked element of it too, the morale element, that in itself is nourishing. When I say nourishment, I also mean it in the sense of for your soul. And food does that, right? It physically brings in what you need in order to survive and optimize your everyday and to just be well. But it also is such a loving thing, eating, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you're providing yourself with so much, I think, when we're consuming stuff, which is obviously why, again, not to be cliche, but it's super important, obviously, that we are mindful of what we're taking into our systems, and obviously the context in which we need specific nutrients for specific purposes and jobs. I mean, I love hearing about this crew in particular, because it just, firstly, it's kind of the open-mindedness of it, and going it from a perspective of, well, we want to perform really well, and recognizing that nutrition and nourishment is at least 80% of that. I mean, it's the bit, if we don't have that, we don't have much. It doesn't matter how technically capable we are, you know, the skills and otherwise, if we haven't got the physical and mental capacity to be there and perform, then all is lost.
What great leadership from the captain to know the importance of that, to make it work so that that could happen on board, and to be able to know and offer a moment in a day, on a hard day, sailing, that everybody got together about one thing. There was one thing they all knew they could look forward to, no matter what was going on, whether the boat was performing brilliantly or whether they were having difficulties at sea. And I think I was really inspired by this captain as well, who was just really, he showed the most amazing leadership skills. And I think that the choice of having that was very nurturing, but also it was a way of just bringing that team together, that crew. It was a very tight-knit crew together, and just giving them that moment where they could just sit together and eat a nourishing meal that was, you know, by then I'd got to know them. I'd been working with them for 3 months. So I got an idea of the kind of foods they liked. And out of the 7 days, they had 3 meals, which were with meat, and 4 meals, which were with just totally plant-based. And I asked them to eat the 3 meals of the meat in the first couple of days and leave the plants till later, because that's much better in terms of in case there was any problems or whatever. But yeah, they really, really enjoyed that. And I think as a team, it was a moment in their day.
I think there's meticulous attention and meticulous intention to the way you approach this topic. And that's why I find it incredibly heartwarming. And I mean that in the deepest sense, because I'm sitting here now very hungry after being very well breakfasted. But just for sheer admiration. And I mean, it genuinely sounds delicious. And as you said, the intention of it is very much, when I say intention, it's because you're thinking so specifically about the moment. And actually, if you're used to having, you know, an 11 o'clock cup of tea and a snack, well, think about what your body is doing right now. It's dipped after breakfast. You've probably had a couple of hours intense work or brain power. You're going to be priming yourself in the next couple of hours for lunch. So this is what might support rather than going for what you might normally have. And that's the intention of the mindfulness behind it, I find, just hangs it all together and is so refreshing to hear. Yeah. And that brings me on nicely, Sarah, to your book.
That's super exciting. Yeah, so this book's in collaboration.
Exciting.
Yeah, you're cracking me up there, Holly, with your yokes. How many puns can we put in there? Yeah, so basically it's in collaboration with our Faceless crew who work to train crew to get into the super yacht sector. I'm giving them the valuable skills they need, and it's such a worthwhile entity. And Tracy heads that, and she's absolutely brilliant and lovely to collaborate with. And it's also done with the proceeds going to a charity called Le Yacht du Coeur, which is a charity in the south of France, which takes all the waste kind of products from super yachts, whether that's food or clothes, and distributes it to the various charities that are in dire need of that kind of stuff. So it's a fantastic cause. And I really love, for when I do something like this, that the most large, it can span out, the ripple effect is really wide. So that it's basically talking about, look, what are eggs? What do we use them for? And how can we, whether it's for binding, for moisture, or for leavening, how can we replace them in the plant-based world? And how can we create delicious food that's actually super nutritious for us without having to use eggs or dairy? And so I go through very, you know, it's really simple. The word that keeps coming back from people who are reviewing it and chefs who are looking at the book, they're saying simplicity. It's just really easy to follow. That's really encouraging, because it's not a coffee table book by any means. You know, the photographs are taken in my 41-foot boat in the main cabin, swinging around anchor with light shining through sometimes and not. And, you know, and basically the idea is, look, this is how I do my magic. And you chefs, amazing chefs with your skills and your knowledge, your expertise and your amazing galleys are going to be able to supersede what I can do in taste, flavor, look. But the basis of it is simple, and I want to share that with you. And so, yeah, it's been getting great reviews, and we're really excited. And that comes out at the end of the month. To be honest, whilst it's written with super yacht chefs in mind, it's really transferable to anybody land on sea, or even on egg allergies, or just looking to, because provisioning eggs is just not an easy, fun thing to do. You know, if you can get them all back to your boat, if you're at an anchorage, you've done really well. And so by not having them, you're also taking away any risk of having any eggs that could possibly be off or not stored well and things like that. So it's no eggs, no worries. And I'm really hoping that it becomes a useful tool and guidebook for sailors, super yacht chefs and land lovers alike.
Where can we get it, Sarah?
Okay, so you can get that on the website, which is smallvegankitchen.com. And no eggs, no worries. You'll see it at the moment down there. And there's like a window which will take you straight through to where you can purchase the book. But if you want to find out about it, then you can sign up to my newsletter. It's just once a month and it just takes you through stories. There's a superfood for sailors section where I talk about a particular superfood and why it's really good for us sailors. I also give some recipes, obviously all plant-based and super easy to do. And then I talk about galley equipment. So I will wax lyrical on some random galley equipment that I really find useful and love. And it's quirky and it's fun. And I'm not promoting any products or anything. I'm just talking about how I use these products on board. And it's my fun little rite. And then I also do a feature on Show Me Your Galley, where we get the chance to talk to a super yacht chef or a crew, blue water cruiser, or anybody out there who's doing something interesting on boats. And they take us around their galley and talk to us about the kind of foods they use and how they cook on on board and we can learn all about each other's experiences, which is great. And we're really happy at how well received it is and how people are really embracing not only a cleaner way of life and more conscious eating and eco-friendly practices, sustainable galleys, but actually just filling themselves with the right nutrition. And that's really, really just so positive for me. I'm really filled with gratitude and inspiration to keep it going.
We're very grateful for you. It's just the coolest thing chatting to you again. And in our students podcast, I look forward to other people being as inspired as I have been, Sarah. But a big thank you for joining me on our Clean Sailors podcast. And as you said, keep an eye out for Sarah's book, No Eggs, No Worries, coming out before the end of October 2024. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Holly. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, and thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Clean Sailors podcast. For information on all episodes and for more about Clean Sailors, head to cleansailors.com. Thank you for listening, and see you for the next episode.